So that I see from there on out. But my came across from St. Dallas. My great grandfather came across. And it was there. And Irugo is there now, Mubarak. His ancestors. There are big, great big places where out under those round houses. When we think of them, we find carvings and wasps. That's been kept along underground. But one of the places on the island,
could you understand the music?
Yes, he speaks my language. He's from a few places, one of the tribes there. Even though by intermarrying, we are sometimes.
There's another one here too, Grace. Save it for Friday. It's a little 11. Or you could look at it now.
Yeah.
You all want to do.
Yeah. Okay. You want me to just tell about them and tell me.
Whatever you want her to do.
Do you have any questions? I have a question most bodies people have to ask them.
Anything that we've done or said?
I'm kind of interested where it said you were told us using wooden boats and then they went back to skin boats.
Yeah.
I found it said they changed the design of the boat that looked like the boat. They used that
walrus hide, walrus skin, split in half and use it to make boats, and they go out and they, even when they hit the ice, it won't break. They were beginning to get some wooden ones, get from some of the ship, brought them, those boats, wooden. They have hole where there's a motor and square part that motor and coming out there, but when they hit the ice, that can break. So they begin to build those walrus skin boats. They make beams and they put this skin and they put a place where motor can be, and they put the motor when they used to paddle. They used to paddle to travel with the motor. They buy from the and put some oil in, and they just so go fast. Walrus hide boats too. There was no motor. Our people before used to just paddle across. That's why when they have song, singing time, another tribe, they like to dance about tail, and sometimes they dance about rowing. They're rowing because those men traveled like that out there in the ocean. When?
Grace, is the motor in there of the boat on
like this, sir. Here's a boat like this. But close to the other end, there's a man sitting there.
Oh, okay.
It's right there. And there's a man that the engineer sits here too, close to the captain. And those are the striker at the very tip, ready his gun there to see if there's some walruses out there.
But they said the film was out of the steel.
What would be the advantage of the heaven?
But you can't have your mortar on the side.
There, the mortar worked like this. Here's a captain set here with his, but the mortar is the middle. And they have, sometimes, they always have a long pole, and they can sit it up there and they get their sails up. When it's, they can go by sailing. When they're close to the whales, when they're hunting whales, they don't use motors because they want to be quiet. That when there's motors, the whales will swim away. No, they cannot be seen. Once in a while, when the whale is killed in springtime, they will bring that, and sometimes it's just one whale for a year, and next year too. Sometimes you get more. Like he said. The white man, what he brought for killing those animals, good, real good help to them too, catching those animals, and guns too for them.
When people are hunting, Grace, what do the captains do? What is their job?
They just work hard on making boats too. We don't have trees on the island. Our wood come from the sea. There'll be big waves around the island. Sometimes when they go out to the beach and the places where they be piles of wood come seen from wherever, and they will bring them and use them for to build a boat. They also save great big ribs from the whales and use them for boat parts too, and for housing too. And then when this wood is fixed up for a boat, they find good wood at the beach and bring them. And then there's a walrus hide that's been split, and they use that and soak it out in the with a rope at the lake for some time, and bring them and put them over that frame and put there another piece there, and they cut them. There are some stitches they know they must learn, and some thread from the muscles of the animals. And the women sew their climb, just sew a piece them up and put them, and the men work hard before they dry up this, because this walrus hide we put, it's in split in half. It's so thick. We eat them too, like that. Cut them fine and boil them and eat them. Every day diet. Just we live on walrus skin and fat there, and some meat from it. Every day diet. But then we have frames, great big frames like this. Can you use this for?
Mm-hmm.
And driftwood. This is driftwood. We don't have trees on the island, but there's a they make frame like this wood. And then they have this. They have ropes and put this walrus hide. It's a great big skin like this with a holes right here, and a rope to put them. And then they put a log across there with the ladder, and the woman climb up there. See, the woman is this big with a, and she stand there. And she has a, we call them ulak. A lot of places in mainland call them ulu. Knife like this, woman use all the time, this size. And she has one there. She's going to climb up there. And men have started all around, not on this. But they started all around here. This is the walrus hide. Here's the size of a woman. So she climbed up there, starting up here first. She goes splitting. Walking across on this, up there, starting there. Once in a while she sharpened her nose. And then again and again until it's way, she will come up. And they will move this log to here. And then to here, the men will. Until she get up there. Real over here is a place where the skin didn't cut. So men will turn it this way and dry, make a great big frame like this, where whole skin is put like that. And then they will put it up to dry. Whole summer, there's some log racks like this where we put things and dry meats up there. We have long sticks up there someplace where we dry meats. And this can be put up there and ladder there. Many times our skins are drying up there in winter time too, like this. In winter time, seal skins go white. They turn, when they dry, they turn white. They dry them up there. But anyway, this one can dry like that. And so it can be put over the boat, split walrus hide. We also use that walrus hide for house tops and for our floor. It will keep us not cold. Even in coldest weather, it won't go through that walrus hide. And in summertime, we have those out and like this. Now, 4th of July celebration too, and the men stand around. Somebody stand on that blanket toss. We use those walrus hides like this. And they be sent way up and land right there. We call that uchtak. Now I'm glad we can write them. Yeah, that's the way walrus hides are.
What's the reason they started that blanket toss? What is that for?
We just some kind of in springtime, not in winter or summer. When the hunting is all over, out to the ice, they go out hunting. And the sun just go down a little bit and come up again during that time. Then when the work is less and they begin to have this, to some celebration with someone that got something, maybe a whale, they'll do that blanket toss. Not all the time. They used to have some times when they quit it, they do that blanket toss too. They used to do some getting together for some, there's some worship, some power. Some people have dreams and something speak to them. That power, demon or devil, that speak to them. There were some times they keep it very secret for that time. And they have some powers that they speak to them. Some people, invisible people speaking to them. And some people have those powers and please them good. And if they don't do them right, a lot of punishment come from them. Deaths will happen, deaths, and no more whales like that for them. So it was good to see missionaries come, and they said that those spirits or people that invisible people talk to, you can stop that. and learn of this God that made man. So they were, a lot of them just happily turn away from them and don't even curse happen to them for not worshiping them. When that time comes when they will gather and build a fire and do things like that, speaking to them. Even they don't do that anymore. And they find out they don't get punishments. So they like to know this new way, Christian way. To ever since that, not too long ago, the time of my, little before my father was born, the missionaries came and teach us. We learn of this God. We know there's a creator, but never heard of the baby that was born. They had to come and tell us that. So that's what happened. I've seen it myself. I've heard a lot of it. I have Eskimo stories my grandfather told about that kind of life back there. Animals speaking to them too a lot. Now we like this education better than animals speaking to us, so that's why we like it. We like schools.
Grace, do you remember any stories about animals speaking?
Oh.
Do you know any short ones that you could tell us?
Yeah, a lot of them. I wrote them, some squirrels. There's a one today to tell you about why squirrels tell a short. The squirrels tell, our ground squirrel tells are short. Out there we don't have trees. Oh, Siberia and Gamble, St. Lawrence Island. But their squirrels and foxes are our animals, wild animals. Polar bears come ashore on the ice sometimes and come ashore. But they're so wild and they don't want to be with people. When they see them, they'll just hit them maybe, so we are scared of them. But those little squirrels, they have hole that big in the ground. There are a whole lot of them by the mountains. And then we go find, they gather some nut roots from some plant that they fill there. They'll fill their food cellars full of them. And we sometimes, people go out nowhere to find them, and we just step around and get a whole lot of what they pick, roots from some plant. And we leave some of them, put it back, and leave some of them. We took some home to eat with seal fats and meat, raw meat. But then one day, squirrel was coming home, her right here full of roots from that plant. And here the raven was landed over in that story, over her hole. Raven, big black bird. And she came, a mother squirrel came and she said, "Oh, I want to get in." "No, I'm not going to let you in." "I want to get in." "I don't think I'm going to let you." You dance?" "Of course I dance. I sing for you," squirrel said. "So you dance." So the squirrel started, "Om olum olum om olum, om olum olum om olum." Raven started dancing. "Om olum olum om olum, om olum olum om olum, unuk te pataka dunehene olum," with eyes closed. With a poor raven started close his eyes. And then go on to where it says feet far apart. She could see her hole. But every time squirrels go, they go see. She went see. Right away the raven bent up. Got up with a tail of a squirrel. And she in there, suffered from her tail, broken tail. and the raven fly away with a tail. And she tell the girls, squirrels, her daughters, girls, go tell raven, I want my tail. So the squirrel girls would come to the raven and they would say, Quah! They call him Quah. Quah! Quah! Mama want her tail. Oh, let it get herself. Let her get it herself. And they would sing, Anna mango, baba go to the ha, wana ha, wana ha. They sing, my mother want her tail. And there raven would say, Anna mango, wapa, leo, let her, in that song, let her get her tail herself. And the girls would go there and say that, he wants you to get it yourself. So up to this day, Groundswell tells are short. The fly, that's how we end our stories. The fly. Let it be nice, clear day. Some people, when they tell stories, it clear up. Some of them, they won't clear the stormy weather. It just storm on. That's the way our people do. So that's a short story. There are some stories. I wrote them out. Travels. Young men travel a long ways back in Siberia. Seeing villages climbing the long range of mountains, and when they look down, there'll be villages that they never see before. But stories like that. Sometimes he'd be finding a nice, pretty girl. And he found some. Now, what else?
I was wondering, before the missionaries came, what do the people believe as far as creation and how man came before the missionaries came?
Oh,
do you have any creation stories or
There's a story of creation when the man was made. There are two animals that decided, how is it now? It's raised this or, I used to know it just like that. What is it now? But,
is it in your book, Grace?
Yes, yeah, some place. But two, spider and bug, that other bug. He said, when the man is made, they make it somehow, that man, first man. When the man is made, he should die, live and die. But that little spider said, oh, when the man is made, he should never die. No dying and live forever, just live on and on. But how is it now? But something happened so that black beetle's way was carried so that man dies now. So we always, when we find those bugs, Malingo we take them and put them in fire. That's the way we always kill them, but we don't kill spiders because they said they're not too good. Man wasn't supposed to be dead, and then we don't kill spiders. But some part of it written someplace, that's for the man to be made. And what happened when the man was made? Yeah, but that's the plan, spider and the beetle. Something else. What is it now? Those are the Eskimo stories that I write. I write them. As soon as we learn, I write legends. See the big books of legends of Eskimo stories that I wrote for the school. You know, as soon as our language is written, and in English too, tell about all those and foxes and ravens and animals talking to each other. And this is the book of I wrote on our tribe's names, all of the names there in my tribe that I came across from Siberia, ever since I came across our people's names are here. Mm-hmm. Oh, not this one, but there's another, like a list of them. Like this. Oh, my. Mm-hmm. Oh, dear. But it's here written. I wrote them. I had a wonderful time writing them. So. And this is a new one I write now.
When did you write your books?
This one?
Yeah, your legends.
Oh, some years ago for the schools, I did them in now, the bilingual. It's written there someplace. Some 6 years ago, maybe I did them in now. Those are the legends, Eskimo stories. And that's my own people. I'm writing another book. I want to see it. Legends in there, like, did the drawing on them so nice. Somebody there did them when I was writing them. Those are repeat at homes all the time. A lot of them are known by our people. They tell them at home for their children, for anybody.
What's your next book about?
What?
You're writing now another book?
Yeah.
What's it about?
I'm writing, I want to see it. The name of it is Precious Memories. But I did it so careless, kind of. But the other one that I wrote, I sent it out to be publisher somehow, couldn't pay for it, so they gave up. And the name of it is Treasures in the Pages. Mm-hmm. Treasures in the Pages, this is Precious Memories. Some of the things I just want to keep them up, so I just write them. How wonderful that writing is, I dance about. Martin, you hear my song?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
About writing?
Yeah.
You sing for us?
So we Eskimos do some singing like that with drums and people. There's a dance that free dance, and there's another that's two or three of the women dance the same way for one song. Any more questions?
Maybe we'll just stop now and give her enough time to walk over. She's got an appointment with Leah Morgan to see if she can't help her to get her book published, or at least to give her some ideas.
Who's going to do the class, lead the class on Friday?
Okay.
I'll give you the list of
that's just isn't right, because, you know, something might happen, but this guy over here is saying the right thing, so, you know, so I think the important thing is, like I said, to just wait, you know, listen to what's in here first.
So how do you figure, how do you deal with, you know, I think you're saying that, you know, the maturity of the people in Huslia are electing. That's an elected position, right?
It's I see it as at one time he was a great leader. Okay. I mean, he's smart, coming from a descendant of leaders. And to me, I see it as a good old boy system. People look out for each other, and that hasn't changed. When I got on the city council, we totally turned everything upside down and got new people in there, put them involved. Things going in this year, but now things are going back to the old ways. People are just the same people are getting back to the old system. I think, like, I've been brought up to respect my elders, not to talk back and listen to them, and, you know, and whether they're right or wrong. But then, when I started talking, the idea was to have competition with the dogs, and I think we've got the toughest dogs after trapping all winter, and we've got the toughest legs by running the snow trees. That's the idea that alcohol had nothing to do with it. But nowadays, it's alcohol, and it's party for days on end, and that's not just one town, it's going from one weekend, and go to another village and do the same thing there. And your body can only take so much. And all this hurting that's going on is young people are traveling back and forth. And it took me some time to figure it out, but I did that myself. And actually, I thought it would be quite fun. But then we figured out that it's wrong. I mean, we have to take our traditional way of doing things. Well, there's a big difference there.
So we're losing the traditional tribal, you're saying consulars. I think that's a term that the people that we go to when we had community problems, maybe even personal problems, and also the consulars that will tell you are going in the wrong direction here, son. And if you don't shape up, you will be in hot water with the community. Those are the kinds of things that we grew up with, right? And all of a sudden, we're still want to have the native consulars and the traditional form of governance, but the traditional form has changed, in which they are being affected by outside forces, TV, alcohol, drugs, and all of these things that are being affecting the traditional leaders within the communities, and because they are natives in the community, are those necessarily traditional leaders anymore? I think that's the question. And you're saying they might be in paper being listened to by the governments that they are. You know, we have that unique relationship with the United States government through Bureau of Indian Affairs, Public Health Service, and all of these agencies within the United States government that the indigenous people, that's the term that is used, that have this relationships, and the traditional leaders are being affected with these outside forces, and no longer are we getting the representation that we got when my father and my grandfather were in that position, who didn't have the outside forces that they were dealing with to make these decisions, the decisions that affected their grandchildren. Because the decisions that are being made in a tribal council in Huxley or any other villages is going to affect the future generations. And what I'm hearing is that they're failing. The decisions being made, and that's why I think that Judy Kleinfeld column really came up, because they, you know, there's some decisions are being made in the villages that are going to affect my grandson, and necessarily are those decisions being made with a rational thinking? That's the question.
I don't know how to say it now.
You know, it's one of those things that we are having to deal with sometimes.
Yeah, we have. Yeah, but we have to. I mean, yeah, we have to deal with that. But I mean, you know, it's pretty hard. I mean, to let that go by. But
is there a mechanism in which the app, you know, where I'm a guest in the Athabascan Nation, and are there forms? You know, you have the traditional chief, Peter John, and traditional second chief, or David Salmon. You know, you have these chiefs come together. Could they be the force that when the traditional council in Huxley is acting up, or they're making these irrational decisions, that they can come and to the council and do they... Is there a way to communicate?
That's what your traditional chief is, you know. It's just like it's like your president, you know. He sets that law, and that's what the traditional chief is for. He's supposed to go around the people, you know, and see if they having trouble or things like that, you know. And that's what the traditional chief is for. Like our leaders, you know, they're supposed to look in these things. But they're not. And these are the reason right now that we don't even know who our counselors is and stuff like that. We don't know. And I'm saying this, that the traditional chief and our leaders like Morris and Willie and them, they should go look into these things and see that they're doing it right, you know. And that's what they're getting paid for.
So there's a dichotomy here. There's a, I'm seeing it maybe. There's two set of rules that we have to deal with, that we as Native people are trying to keep up with the traditional form of governance, and then these corporations are put together that answer to rules and regulation and statutes of the United States government and the state of Alaska, the legislative process in which the way that I responded is that these rules and regulations were made in Washington, D.C. Without any consultation and input from... We're talking about the indigenous people anymore, right? That was what I was responding with to Paul Dean's comment the other day, that that we should follow these rules and regulations, but these rules and regulations were made without the consent of the people that impacted. That are being impacted by these rules and regulations. Instance, the treaty between Mexico, Canada, and the United States concerning migratory birds, the season in which these birds can be hunted are seasons that are made when the ducks are in Mexico. And when they migrate to our area, that's out of season. And one summer, one springtime, this man happened to have had a duck in his hand walking home, and a fishing game trooper saw him and said, "You have broken the law of three nations, Mexico, Canada, and United States. So therefore, we're arresting you for violating this law that we have." And the men got wind of it, and all of the men grabbed a duck and went to the fish and arrest us too, because we have surely have broken the law. And if you, there must have been about 600 men with a duck, and they said to the fish and game trooper, "If you arrest us, when our children get hungry, the women are going to go out and hunt. They buy migratory birds and so they could feed their children. And if you arrest the women, then what's going to happen to the children in that community?" And so there was to stand up. And those kinds of rules and regulations were being made without, I think, the consent of the local people. And they were made without any, the ducks come, the season opens September 15, and before that, the birds are migrating back already. They've migrated back to Mexico again when the season opens. And that's where, the idea of do we stay within the law, because the law says so. And that's where I parted with Paul Dean, because he said, you have to be right inside the law here, And but that's the dilemma that we're in, and it's good that we have a chance to get people like Howard Luke to come here and make our minds to start thinking like this.
Oh, I was just going to say, and then you have the Canadian goose, which lays its eggs in the little ponds on the wayside, and then you've got these airboats coming through and destroying them. So, what about that kind of law? where animals are being destroyed without even having a chance to survive.
And like he said, I think he cannot do it by himself. And we cannot do it by ourselves to make a regulation that would forbid, and maybe at a certain point of time in which the migratory birds are having eggs, nesting, yeah. When the migratory birds are nesting, during that time, that there would be a regulation in which these things shouldn't be used for recreation or things like that. So, yeah, that's the dilemma we're in. I think that's where, what should we do with the airboats?
I just want to mention something before the day is through. There is a really powerful miniseries that's going on right now, and it's about what happens in the next 30, 40 years, or even 50 years. It has to do with, it's focusing on a family where a hurricane came through and completely demolished their lands, and it's a really, I think it's really powerful visually, and it's just talking about how the government has, where they were talking, this one scientist is talking about, well, if we had done this 20 years ago, the result would have been different. And they were talking about the global warming and how if we had changed this 20 years ago, you know, maybe this would turn out to be the way it is, but it isn't. And so we're in this, you know, massive destructive dilemma, and talking about how water is increasingly coming in, like, you know, every year comes in another, water comes in on the land 50 feet and every year that happens, and then the land within where the farmers were, where you have the South Dakotas and all that, where it has dried up. And there's no, so it's really interesting. I don't know. I believe it started last night, and it's continuing for the next 3 days, I think, for the next place.
So Wednesday is the last day with Howard, but it's not our last day. We're going to have a potluck with him on the 30th. Some of you that didn't come, we were planning it for this Friday. It's being rescheduled for the 30th. Okay?